Good morning. It is Tuesday, March 8th, and this is Bowler's Grind. I'm your host, Marshall Kennebrew, and today we have on co-host Kyle Michalowski and special guest Doug Stockton. He is a bowler out of California. He also runs his own podcast, This Week in Car Audio, and we are going to discuss car audio things as well as just bowling stuff. And we're kind of going to recap the big Kahuna event that we partook in and took ninth place in. So I hope you guys enjoy. Doug, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, sir.
Happy birthday to you, sir. Thank you for welcome, or thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
How's your birthday going? First and foremost, thanks for joining us on your birthday. I know you didn't have to do this, but how's your birthday going?
It's another day around the sun is all.
I hear that. A couple of things I wanted to start off with. I know there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about in terms of bowling, and you do a podcast as well. But first and foremost, tell us a little bit about your podcast and how people can find your podcast.
My podcast is called This Week in Car Audio. We talk about car audio and car audio related things. I'm one of the head judges for the entire world for car audio in DB drag racing. We just talk to champions. As a matter of fact, last week we did a show and just talked to someone about how they design their subwoofer boxes. We've talked to stuff like Rockford Fosgate and the equipment that they're coming out with. We talk a wide range, but it's in general, we talk, definitely about the competition scene and about the car audio culture.
Okay, that's awesome. I didn't know you also judged and like dealt with the competition side of things. So what are some factors that deal with or that you kind of judge in terms of having a better car audio and things like that?
The reason I do what I do is the organization's called DB Drag Racing, DBDRA, and we have a sensor that tells the judge how loud the car is. So there's no there's no subjective portion of the competition other than classifying the vehicles. But once we've classified the vehicles, then it's real simple. Whoever has the higher score wins. So.
Okay. Good stuff. And I know you briefly told me about it over at the Big Kahuna tournament. So that kind of briefly kind of tells me a little bit more about what you do in the audio world and how you judge and things like that. Was there anything specific you wanted to talk about in the car audio, or do you want to jump right into the bowling stuff?
Oh, no, the car audio, anybody that wants to check out stuff about car audio culture, it's in general car culture. But yeah, car audio specifically, just come check out my podcast. We do it every Monday night at 6 p.m. California time.
And one more time, what was the name?
This Week in Car Audio.
This Week in Car Audio. Cool. Check it out.
Yes,
there,
sir.
Guys. So shifting into bowling, we're going to have Kyle joining us in a little bit. But I just wanted to talk about my Big Kahuna experience with you. I know Kyle was the one that introduced me to you. He told me that there was a team looking for a bowler for the Big Kahuna tournament. I was willing to do it, but at the same time, I was hesitant because I'm 4 months into changing my game completely, as you saw, and I've been trying to ease off on the competitions and double down on just practicing and getting my mechanics right. But I had a great time. I think we finished in ninth out of a lot of teams. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe there were, 45 teams per squad or so. So, yeah. Your team finished ninth. I don't think that was the team I was on with you. I think you were on the other team. But yes, we reached out to Kyle. Kyle bowled with us in October in that tournament. And so I reached out to Kyle because I had somebody with a family issue and couldn't make it. And Kyle said he was had previous engagement, so he suggested you, and we took you up on the offer.
Yeah, no, and it was great. I feel like I did somewhat of my part. I bowled right around my
Yes.
average or a little bit above. I was a li I'm a pretty hard critic on myself. Back in the day I played college baseball, and if I feel like I'm not doing like above and beyond, I don't feel like I'm really crushing it. So looking back, I wish I would have done a little bit better. I it was a great time being a part of the team because you personally helped me figure something out in my game, as well as your team. I think finished a little bit higher than ours. I think you guys finished in like the top five. Is that correct?
No, we finished in the top five for one day, but not in the tournament as a whole because we finished something like 41st on the other day.
Ah,
So,
that's
yeah,
all right. You
we didn't do so well.
Well, the day that I was there and I wasn't sick, because I for whatever reason, I had a stomach flu the second day. You guys were crushing it, so I just assumed you guys crushed it both days.
Yeah, no, we didn't do so well both days. No, you guys did you did great, especially for a team event. Whenever you bowl any kind of tournament in a team event, if you get at least half of your team just to bowl their average and one or two people go off and shoot 60, 70 pins over average, your team tends to do really well in a tournament. So the goal is to at least shoot your average. If you're shooting average, most likely you're going to at least get to the bottom of cash.
Right. And I totally agree with that. That's something that I'm learning and continually learning as I bowl in tournaments is that, you don't always have to hit it out of the park game one, game two, and game three. Sometimes you just have to kind of chip away and find that comfort zone. And I feel like our team kind of did that. So that was cool.
And I really enjoy the team atmosphere with these tournaments because, as you found out, the guys I travel with around when we go to Vegas or Reno or LA or San Jose or wherever we go, we tend to try and build each other's game up. We give them suggestions and maybe see something that they can't see when they're up there bowling and try and help them see the lane a little bit better. And that's one of the great things about a team atmosphere and tournaments.
No, I couldn't agree more. One of my faults as a bowler, and I don't know if it's just coming from the baseball world where I try to figure it out myself, is that I try to self-coach, and especially with my phone, if I know that there's something I need to be working on and I'm not doing it, the last thing that I need is 50 other people telling me different things to be working on. So there's a fault in me that sometimes when I come to these team events, I kind of just have my headphones on and I'm like zoned in on what I have to do. But as I start to open up and do more team events, I learn that like there's a lot of lessons and knowledge to be learned the more you can have that kind of team camaraderie and just ask questions. And for me, after I think I met you guys 10 minutes before we started, and after first game, you guys were definitely helping me out, noticing, telling me things in a very receptive way, not just telling me how I need to change my game or do this or that. It was very encouraging of like, try this out. What do you think about that? So, just want to give you guys thanks on that because I definitely was a little nervous to start off the tournament.
No, understandable. And as a team and also a team event, if we can give you suggestions or you can give us suggestions, that's going to help your game and then help the team game. Because in team, the idea is to break the lane down properly for the team, not necessarily for an individual, unless you have a high averaged individual, then the team can break the lane down for that one particular person. But in general, you want to break the team down so that each person can take advantage of the way the lanes are transitioning instead of having to fight them.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that was one of the things that I've learned from previous team events that I always ask now is that, like, if it gets messy for me, would anyone on the team mind if I use urethane? And I kind of threw that out there, even though, again, as I'm getting more and more into my knowledge of bowling, the more I can just leave that urethane in the bag and learn how to properly use a reactive, even if it's a weak reactive, and try to help break down it properly, you know, that might help the team exponentially versus me have a 10 pen increase per game because I'm comfortable. So to recap how I bowled and the things that I use, I wanted to really be a good team player and use reactive. And I don't know if you saw a lot of my game, because again, you were focusing on your team, I think the lane next to us, but man, I was struggling with that reactive. It was overhooking. And I'll talk about it in a little bit, things that I've worked on since then that have kind of alleviated that problem. But in the moment, the reactive was overhooking. I asked the guys if it would be all right if I used my desert tank, which is quote unquote, not a real urethane. And then all of a sudden I was back in my comfort zone, scoring higher, but there was a reaction problem. I feel like the team's reaction changed a little bit. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
So, yeah, so we actually discussed that. Even though we weren't on the same team, obviously, you know, I came there as a group. Our group, we discussed lane play together, and truly, I'm trying to learn again. I used to bowl at a high level back in the 80s and 90s. I took 22 years off. I just came back in 2017, started bowling again. The game is drastically different now than it was then. With that being said, we still want to, I personally am still trying to learn lane play, but I can still see the motion of the ball because I know what it should look like. So we bounce back and forth, even though I'm not on your pair, I want the group of people I came with to be successful.
Yep.
So we bounce back and forth off of each other. Hey, did you see that? Do you see that's not happening? Or notice the ball's not finishing. And because you didn't start with the desert tank, we were able to break the lane down in a way that when you started using the desert tank later on, the heads still had oil on them versus the heads getting burnt up when you go with on the fresh. So they were able to get just slightly left of you and use what you were creating with that desert tank as some hold. And as you saw, Mike Steele was able to create a reasonable amount of room, and he was shooting high 900s for his four game set.
Absolutely. And you know, these, like, again, I'm trying to be more of a student of the game because I've only been into tournament bowling and doing league bowling consistently for about a year and a half now. So it's like, I want to be a better team bowler when it comes to being on a team, because if I can't play my role and help everyone else be better, then it's pointless for me. You know what I mean? And I look at it like I took that Big Kahuna tournament as a lesson of, like, going forward, I almost should just leave my urethane at home and, you know, maybe put a couple of days worth of using. I think one of the guys on the team recommended, like, the Hype. That'd be a good ball for me. Mm-hmm. And really finding balls that line up with me instead of just me always wanting to run to my urethane when things get bad. Because, you know, that might be fine if I'm in a single comp, but when it comes to team comps, really have to make sure that the focus is on the team, because at the end of the day, your scores are attached. You know, that's the truth of the matter.
That's very true. One person getting 5-6 pins over his average, but destroying the lane for the other four, ends up being a net loss for the team. So,
absolutely. Lesson learned. And glad I at least waited till the last game to do that instead of doing it the whole time. So from that tournament, one of the biggest takeaways as far as mechanics go that you noticed, and I'm going to give you credit, was my slide and my heel. And how they were not right. So I don't know if you want to kind of speak on that real quick, Doug.
So the credit for that, for sure. Cliff Nicholas, he was bowling with you, and he noticed that you were sliding heel first. Well, once he told me that, I said, I know what his problem is, because I had that same issue probably 6 to 8 months ago. I learned, you know, you have two slides on these shoes that are interchangeable. Well, yeah, I would put a 12, which is the black ice and the slickest slide that they have, for the SST 8s that I bowl with. And then I would put a rubber sole on the heel, and I was sticking. I'm going, how am I sticking when I'm essentially sliding on a piece of felt? So I was playing around with some stuff, and I noticed that they made different heels. I started testing different heels and noticed that my heel I used as a brake when I went back and looked at it on slow motion. And I learned that you need to match your heel to your slide. So nowadays I'm running about an 8-inch on the slide. I'm using a lesser stick. It's a number 8 slide. And then I went to a less slicky heel, slick heel. And that made a huge difference. And I was able to control my slide way better, being in about the middle of the tackiness on the slides. Another thing I found is using soapstone on the heel or on the slide gave me a slight change, instead of drastically just changing to another number or two down or up. I could put soapstone on there, and it was more of a, like a half number slide change.
Absolutely. And by you going through that and sharing that information with me, now in competition, I was a little bit freaked because I didn't want to change too much in the moment. And I also waited to my fill shot. I was like, I'm going to do it, because you're right. You know, as soon as I saw it on my, because I was recording my shots, and as soon as you said it to me, I looked at it and I was like, yeah, there's the proof. It's a fact. It makes sense. Because I had bought these shoes maybe about a month ago. It's the first time I really bought some interchangeables, and all I was focused on was the slide, and I had the max 10 slide on. I didn't even know that there was a 12 until I started talking to you about it. And in the film, it's like I just put all my weight into my heel, so I'm sliding on my toe, but as soon as the heel touches, it's break. And as soon as my bottom half breaks, the whole top half flies forward, and I just kind of shovel it forward. So I waited till the fill shot. I think we put on the most slick heel to go with it.
Right.
And I fell directly on my face, and it was wonderful because I felt free for the first time. I felt like, oh, wow, that's what it's supposed to feel like. And, you know, in the moment I said, I'm just gonna, you know, tinker with it a little bit. It's funny that we were doing this in competition, because again, these are the things that I want to iron out of my game. Not have to play so much guessing games as far as knowing what's going on with my footwear and such. But we were messing around with it a little bit. We did some of the soapstone, and that seemed to be the most logical. Okay, that works good for now, and in time, I'll mess around with this. So this, I put a little soapstone on it and felt very comfortable. I do need to get some of that, because I think that will be useful to have on hand, as well as maybe even a brush. But, you know, these are things that I didn't think about a year ago getting into bowling. And now that I'm getting down to the nitty gritty, I notice that these things matter.
And just for the people that are listening and might not know where to pick that up, any kind of welding supply store, Home Depot or whatever, air gas, those all have the soapstone and the wire brush. They're really cheap. And they work. They're great for bowling, but they're both in the welding department of your local hardware store.
Sweet, sweet. No, I'm sure, like I said, it's helped me tremendously that day and going forward. I want to tell you a little bit about how things have gone with just me messing with them. I actually use an 8 now as well. So I went down on the toe, and I actually experimented like in five games today. So I messed around with this specifically today so we could talk about it. And when I first showed up, I didn't know what numbers were going to match up with the heel because I got three heels and I think like four or five different felts for the toe. And I tried the 10, tried the rubber stop. I found that the 8 with the heel that's the most slick gives me the perfect slide. And from there, you know, obviously I can modify it, but I think that is going to be my benchmark footwear as far as that goes.
Yeah, that's I get into some situations where it is quite humid outside, and at that point I usually go to that really slick heel. And there's actually been opportunities where I'm using my Black Ice number 12 on the toe, and I got the red super slick heel the slide's just right. But that's why you spend the money and, you know, buy these interchangeable soles.
Right. It's so funny. I get these expensive pair of interchangeable shoes and I'm using them like they're just a regular pair of shoes. You know, I'm finally using them the way that they're designed to be used. So, you know, voila, things are working better. One other thing that I thought was kind of cool when we were chit-chatting about bowling is that you literally document all of your bowling stuff as far as just the balls you use. You want to tell me a little bit about as far as your procedures and all that?
So I currently use a program or a app called PinPal. It's a paid app. I think it was only $3 or something like that. But it documents what ball I use, what lanes, so the location I'm at, the oil patterns, and the pins I leave behind for each frame. So I can go back and look at my spare percentages. I can look back at my strike percentages, my makeables, my single pins. I can look at all that stuff and kind of break it down and help me know what to practice when I do practice. The most advantageous part of that app for me personally, like I mentioned to you, I did 546 tournament games in the year of 2021. So that was from January 1st to December 31st of 2021. I did 546 games, but I can go back and look and see what ball I used, what ball was successful on one oil patterns when I go to another new tournament this year or in the future. The great thing is I don't need to know the exact ball. I do know the exact ball, but that's not what's important. At least it tells me what family of ball that I can start with, and then I can look and see where I was getting better or how the lanes transitioned. What type of ball did I transition into? And it helps me design a game plan when I go into a tournament now.
Absolutely. No, it's at the end of the day, it's like knowing, you know, it's better to know what your tools do instead of just showing up and trying to figure it out while you're having to compete, because there's so many other factors and things that you're going to have to deal with, whether it's, you know, 10 pins or oil transition or just emotions, that if you can kind of get rid of some of the thinking, take some of the thinking out of the process and just go, oh, this ball worked great on this last scenario. We're going to start with that and have a great day. It's better than just showing up in warmups and throwing 10 balls, trying to figure it out with five shots.
Yeah.
So,
but I will say I don't lock into a ball. That was something I was doing probably the beginning of last year, and through bowling that many tournament games, I did learn that even though I was in that house on that oil pattern, that doesn't mean that's the right ball. It just gives me an idea to where to start, and I'll throw a couple of them and that's not the motion I'm looking for. I'll change balls, but at least I have the family of type of ball. Am I throwing asymmetrical? Am I throwing solids? Am I throwing pearls?
Right.
Am I throwing something that rolls early, rolls late, you know, it's a great tool. Cause it, you know, I bring 9 balls with me as my tournament collection that I go bowl a tournament with. And it tells me essentially which of the 3 bags that I get into on the fresh and which bag I'm going to get into as it transitions.
No, I love that. And again, these are the things that I need to start ironing out of my game. I started off playing by feel, and I still kind of do that more than I should. And it's better to kind of have a game plan than it is just to kind of play by feel. And it's good to have both, but I need to focus more on the intricacies of the bowling side of things.
Yes, sir. You know, I was a physics major in college, and so the physical part of the game I really focused on last year, and it definitely shows. I went from a 189 average last year to I'm averaging 202 in league currently. And I will honestly say it is probably the toughest house in our area. There's a gentleman that I bowl with, his name's Jason. He bowls literally any other house and he's 228 or better. He was a 235 for the last like 7 years before he came to this house, and he's only averaging 20 himself. So that's not an easy house. And you know, that helps me in my opinion, with being able to get out there and read lane play a little bit better, and hopefully make me better in the tournaments.
For sure. Good stuff. Well, then I wanted to ask you, as we're kind of heading to the end, what tournaments do you have coming up either in Vegas or in the near future? We're in March now, so either in March or maybe in the next month or so.
So I literally look for tournaments every weekend. That's the only way you're going to end up with 500 plus tournament games in a year. But this weekend, I'm going to bowl on, I believe it's like Kryptonite or something like that. That's tomorrow up in Sacramento. I'll be there bowling that tournament. It's a pattern tournament. And I try to bowl on patterns almost always. It's just more conducive to the way I roll my ball than a house shot. House shots, I get a lot of over-under. So right. I really try and stay away from house shots. But I have that tournament. And then, like I said, I live in a very good area for tournaments. I have Reno coming up March 11th and 12th for the Pam Buckner tournament. After that, there's a couple of Masters tournaments coming up in my area. I think there's one in Stockton coming up. I'll bowl that. Then I have Vegas in October, which will be the new the Kahuna tournament again. So that's my next time I'm planning on going there. I'm talking with my wife about going to Wichita to bowl that big Wichita tournament that they have over at North Rock every year. If you're not familiar with that, that's a big money, long-standing tournament. So if you guys get a chance and you want to bowl for some money for with some great bowlers, it's at North Rock in Wichita every year. It ends, I believe, like the beginning of July. So it starts in middle March and ends in the beginning of July. Also up in Reno, I got April 9th and 10th. I'm going to be bowling in Carson City and at the stadium. Gina Moore, M-O-U-R. She throws really good handicap tournaments. So if you guys are trying to get into tournaments and you want a good start, and if you're in the Northern California, Northern Nevada area, the Gina Moore's tournaments are freaking, they're great, especially for handicap bowlers. They're mostly competitive. You
said one word that caught my ear is Carson City. That's actually where I went to college at Western Nevada. So it would be nice to kind of swing up there and kind of take a trip down memory lane, and as well as kind of compete at some point. But definitely keep us on the. Have you filled up your big Kahuna team?
We are possibly going to be able to bring. Right now, it looks like 8 teams to the Kahuna this year, this for October.
Wow. Okay. Well, again, I haven't committed, and I enjoyed bowling with you guys. So if you want to add me to the mix, or I mean, I'll check in with Kyle. I think he just texted me now, but see if he maybe wants to join in on that as well. We'd love to bowl with you.
Yep. No, we would love to have you there. I kind of try to leave the guys that live in Vegas for last because I'm always going to have somebody who drops out, and it's easier to find somebody in Vegas than in California when we go out that way, you know.
Right. Cool. Good stuff. So we are here. We're just going to jump right into things. And me and Doug were chit-chatting about a couple things before we started recording. But I just wanted to let you guys kind of tell the story about how you guys met, and then that will kind of translate to how I got to meet Doug as well. But right now we're here with Kyle and Doug Stockton. So go ahead, guys.
You want to start it, Kyle, or you want me to?
So Doug, we met through Ramsey. Ramsey was trying to set up matches, like action matches, and he messaged me saying there was a guy who wanted to do a match with someone around my average. And then Doug hit me up and he's like coming into town to bowl some stuff, and he wanted to get an action match in. And then he came along and we met and we did a action match live, and I bowled way better than I thought I ever would.
You destroyed me. Yeah, so on my end, I was watching Dougie Vision on Facebook and YouTube, and Ramsey and I were kind of just talking, and I saw him watching Dougie Vision too, and I called up Ramsey, said, "Hey, I'm heading to Vegas. I know you do tournaments in Vegas. Do you got somebody that's, you know, around a 2-0? I'm a 188 average bowler. I'm looking for somebody around a 2-0. You got somebody?" And he goes, "Yeah, let me contact this guy and see what's up." So I show up to Vegas. You're bowling the Kahuna, but you were bowling the No Tap the day before. And so I went through. I figured out who you were. I watched you bowl the ball. And I said, "Hey, I'm going to tell you right now. You aren't the same level as me. You aren't even close." But on that note, I made an arrangement with you to go bowl action. So we will absolutely still bowl that, and I'll honor it, but I ain't doing it $100 a game. So,
Yeah, that's definitely 100% fair. My average fluctuates really badly, and it all depends on if I'm striking or not. If I'm striking, there's like next to nobody who can beat me. But if it comes to a spare contest, that's where it gets problem. I've been working really hard on it recently, and it's been showing, but and my strikes have not been as much showing as they used to be, but I'm hoping to get that back in line.
Yeah, so I think game one, you go 270, I go like 240 or something. Then game two, I go like 210 or 220, and you only go 180 or 190. Low, you know, it wasn't very good. It was transitioning again, and you were figuring out. And then I can shoot what, 299? So I was locked out by frame seven or something.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was nuts. I didn't even expect it to go that crazy. It was just like I don't know what was. Usually I bowled bad at Texas, which was the surprise. It just for some reason it had the shape that I needed to just make it happen.
Oh yeah, no, and like at that time, I guarantee you 100%, we were not in the same ballpark with our abilities. You were definitely way above me. I was in that point of where, like I said, I was 189 then. I'm a solid 2-0 right now, and I'm getting a much better at bowling as we, you know, as I practice. I listen to your guys' podcast and listen about how you guys have your practice sessions on like Monday nights or something like that, the sport practice. I do that. I actually bowl Monday, Tuesday, practice Wednesday, bowl Thursday, and practice Saturday, and bowl tournaments Saturdays and Sundays. So
Sheesh.
that's how
So,
but that's how you get better, right?
yeah. So,
1,000%.
with you being in California, what are like for us? We kind of our options are limited to what the casinos want to do. But for you, is it a lot easier to get patterns put out and stuff like that, or is it just as hard?
So I'm at an advantage compared to most people, I would say. One of my local houses here, I have become friends with the guy who runs it. Getting a pattern put out's not difficult. The other place, or so I was also at that time, I was going with a coach all through COVID. And so while everybody was sitting at home or whatever, I was literally bowling three nights a week, but it was only practice. I didn't even see a score for almost the whole year of 2020.
Oh, wow.
All I did was practice and learn how to bowl better. And that's great. Yeah, so all these houses were closed in California the entire year. They were closed for 18 months here in California. But the coach that I had, his name's Rick Hamlin, he has a relationship with these bowling alley proprietors. And so he would get them to open up 2-3 lanes for us a couple days a week just to get their machines running and their oil. And so, like I said, I was at an advantage, and I took advantage of that, and I would spend 3 hours a day, 3 days a week just practicing. And like I said, for almost all of 2021, or sorry, 2020, I never saw a single score.
On that point about just practicing and not having the monitors on or the scores up, there's something really valuable in that, because on Monday nights, we don't have that up. And there's a sense of me getting locked into whatever my mechanics are or whatever my focus is, versus me thinking about scores and pins and the competition and where they're at. Like, it's very nice just to really lock in and just not have to think about the score. So I can clearly see why that made you better doing that for a year straight.
Yeah. And on my Wednesday nights, I'm once again, I do 100% feel advantaged in this. I bowl with a couple of PBA senior bowlers on Wednesday night, and play and learning from them and them showing me stuff, you know, that's invaluable information that not a lot of people have. And I'm very thankful for those advantages that I do have.
That's dope. No, that's good stuff.
Yeah. And it's, that's the one thing that never translated as well for me, is because like, if I bowl with some of the older guys or something, I don't really learn too much for them, just because their game is so far removed from mine. Like Jerry Johnson, I bowl with him a lot, but I can't learn anything from him, because he's basically playing the five board, never moving, never having really change a ton, just like little moves. Whereas like me, it's like my moves have to be a lot bigger, and it's just like completely different worlds.
So I do understand what you're saying there. But what I do get from those guys is I'm learning length, ball shape, motion, right? Yeah. So yeah. I'm looking at shape. It is, you know, you start on the three board and hit 10 at the arrows. They are looking for a shape. Mm-hmm. And so that is really what I'm learning from these guys, because obviously I'm pretty far left from these guys. You know, my rev rate's in the 480 plus. Yeah. I'm one-handed. And my ball speed is about 21 off hand. Yep. So obviously these are senior bowlers. My speed and my rev rate's considerably higher than both those people that I bowl with, but they can help me with ball shape and what I need to be seeing the lane doing, how my ball goes through the pins, talking about the pins I left and why I left them. And, you know, that's information from those guys bowling for 50 plus years.
Yeah. So from your takeaways from them, what has been the biggest thing that like you've noticed that have changed, like been allow you like make moves and stuff that would allow you to stay in front of your movement or your transition and keep the ball shape that you're looking for?
So the transition and staying in front of it, I have not done a great job with that. Usually it takes me 6 frames, which means I gave away an entire game. What I am looking at it, and I'm getting better with, and what I, instead of giving away a game and a half, 2 games, I'm down 5 to 7 frames now, looking at the last pin to fall. How did it fall? And what pin fell? Hmm. And with all that practice that I've done, I do know that I throw the ball consistent. And even my bad balls are good enough that I can see what happens and know that I need to adjust. Even ball, it was good enough that it should tell me if I need to adjust. And I would say that's probably that, and getting me a pre-shot routine, which I didn't even have before 3 months ago. Getting that pre-shot routine and knowing that I throw the ball good enough that if I see a trip four, I really should be moving, even if I didn't throw the ball great.
So a lot of people hear about the pre-shot routine, but for you, what is your pre-shot routine?
So mine's very, very, very basic. I put my fingers in the ball first, bury my thumb. I look down at my feet to assure that I'm in the right spot on the approach. Look up at the arrows, look to my break point, bring it back to the arrows, and then I start my approach. Before, I couldn't tell you what I was doing. I just know I look down at my feet and then start looking at the arrows, and I'm still moving my hand around and whatnot. But now it has helped me considerably when I have a pressure shot. Not that I was bad at pressure shots before, but now even when I have to throw a pressure shot, I almost don't feel the pressure because it is so exactly the same by adding that pre-shot routine.
I love that. No, and that's something that in the backstage bowling group with Mike Shady and all them, he just hones in on pre-shot routine so much, just because what you said, you're going to have these high pressure moments that creep up on you. And if you start doing different stuff in that moment, you're probably screwed. But if you can kind of be ahead of that moment, call it mental transition, and stick to your guns and just do the exact same thing every time, you take away a lot of that stress. So I hear that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have zero 300s. I mean, I have an 800, but I got zero 300s. And
that's wild.
And I will tell you, every time I screw up a 300 is, okay, I just need to throw a couple more and I got a 300. And that's the thought in my head. And I'll ring a 10 or stone 9, you know.
That thought right there takes you out of the present moment versus whatever your pre-shot routine is essentially keeping you present.
Yes, sir.
So what is the closest you've been for 300?
I have two 299s in the last 3 months.
Oh, wow. Man. Damn.
And I will tell you, my second 299, I've watched the video, and I will tell you that was as good of a ball as I could possibly throw. And it just, the 10 pin just, it rung right around, or the 6 pin rung around the 10 pin, hit the 10 pin, and just didn't knock it up.
Oh, wow. Damn.
So I'll get it. That was when I shot my 800. I started off 299 when I shot my 800.
Well, congrats on the 800.
Thank you.
Double congrats on the birthday again. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
So, Doug, how is your passion for car audio and bowling similar?
So, with car audio, it was something I did as a little kid. Bowling, when I lived in Reno, I left my parents' house when I was 15 years old. And I needed something to do at night. The bowling alleys are open 24/7 in Reno. So I learned how to bowl. Got really good really quick. Car audio, I was doing that since I can remember. I love loud stereos. Once I became, I actually was a manufacturer for a short amount of time. 5 years, I owned my own car audio manufacturing company. During that time, I learned a lot of stuff about learned about the competition scene and was part of that. Bowling is just something I've loved to do since I didn't even start bowling until I was 16-ish. And I absolutely 100% love bowling. The difficulty was when I moved to California, we were 45 minutes away from a bowling alley. And I left for work at 3 a.m. Bowling league start at 7 o'clock. Doesn't put me to bed till about 11:30. With 22 years, I decided that a better use of my time to be with my family, and I stepped out of bowling. We moved to another city where there's a bowling alley literally 7 minutes from my house. My wife says, "Do you want to start bowling again?" And I asked her, I said, you do know what you're talking about, right? I don't do anything halfway.
So, opened up that can of worms.
Yes. So I said, you do know what you're saying. And so we said, hey, cool. We're going to start bowling again. And, you know, it's progressed to the point where, like I told you, last year I did 546 tournament games in 12 calendar months. So that's how obsessive I get about bowling. Car audio, I'm one of the head judges for the entire world. So I travel all over the country to put on car shows. I have a passion, and it's the culture is very similar between car audio and bowling. Once you're in that culture and you're part of that group of people, you tend to find people encouraging and want to help you and be part of what you're doing and want you to be better. And that is a huge parallel between the two different industries. So, I mean, I'm just not a halfway kind of guy. So, you know, when I bowl, I bowl. I even plan my car audio competition. So I judge them all over the United States, mostly in California and Nevada. I will plan my car audio shows, and I do about 25 a year. I will plan them around bowling tournaments, like like awesome. In Reno. Yeah, so I got a tournament in Reno April 9th. So in the morning, I'll go do a car show, and that way I can write everything off. And then in the afternoon, I'll bowl a tournament.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So just
crushing it, man. That's the dream right there.
Everything around it.
Yeah. I mean, but thankfully, you know, I have a wife, and she allows me to do that because, you know, that's a lot of time not with her.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's great, man. I appreciate you kind of elaborating on that. And speaking of time, we don't want to take up too much of your time on your birthday. So we want to thank you, Doug, for joining us, kind of chatting about a couple things. We're definitely going to have you back on because this was really fun to chat with you about all this stuff. But yeah, happy birthday, Doug. Thank you again.
Yeah, happy birthday, Doug. Did you want to shout out anybody or
Just like I said before, my podcast, if you guys are interested in listening to it, we do it every Monday night at 6 p.m. and we talk about the car audio culture, and that's the gist of it on This Week in Car Audio.
This Week in Car Audio. All right, guys. Well, good talking to you, and until we talk to you again, see you next week.
Happy birthday, Doug.
Thank you.
Hey guys, thank you for taking the time if you made it all the way to the end of the podcast. Big special thanks to Doug Stockin for taking the time on his birthday to come on the podcast. We will have him on again. And in the future, we have a couple people lined up to come onto the podcast. If you yourself would like to talk bowling or discuss things that are going on in the bowling world from your perspective, please feel free to DM us on Instagram or Facebook and we will make it happen. Have a great week.